Wonderful to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. I guess the theme of the day, looking back historically to better understand our future. We certainly did that looking at that huge supermarket strike and lockout of 16 years ago. And we conclude today's program by looking at the history of the American automotive industry and what that might tell us about the industry's ability to adapt to what seems to be the universal view that fully autonomous vehicles are the future. With us, Dan Albert, who is a historian from the University of Michigan, where he got his PhD. He writes about cars for N Plus One magazine, and his new book, Are We There Yet? The American Automobile, Past, Present, and Driverless. Dan, great to have you with us today.
Larry, excited to be with you.
Let's talk about some of these, you know, formative periods in my lifetime. I certainly remember the oil crisis and embargo and how that had an effect on the kinds of cars that were being designed out of Detroit and the rise of smaller Japanese, you know, vehicles to you know, take that primary position. But you know, how often has the automotive industry gone through these sorts of cycles?
I think what you're talking about there is certainly something that's in my memory, the transition from sort of the great American boats that you and I probably grew up with to the smaller, more exciting to drive, particularly the Japanese coming in, but also go back a little further to the Volkswagen Beetle, which came in the 50s. And you see absolutely a transition in terms of the way we drove and in terms of the way we felt about cars. And then also it's worth noting that there was a real cultural tension, particularly in Detroit in the 1980s when those cars came in. Things like, you know, pay a dollar and smash a Toyota was a carnival event in Michigan. So that was certainly a transition within the industry. I don't know that it's as major a transition as really the beginning of the automobile. And now as we look towards the autonomous automobile, we're really talking about a profound, profound change.
So the beginning of the automobile, what we have at the start, a rich person's leisure time activity, and then Henry Ford changes everything.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one of the things I like to point out is the automobile was invented many, many times over the course of history, going back into the 18th century. But it wasn't until the 1880s, 1890s that it becomes something that's desirable. And it's not really desirable as transportation initially because it's a huge machine and very, very expensive. So you have people like, you know, the Rothschilds, the Vanderbilts buying these what today would be $250,000 car and just going racing and zooming around town and having fun with them. So it wasn't really a transportation machine. And then, as you say, you get Henry Ford, you get Oldsmobile is another one, where particularly in the United States, this becomes very democratic and, in a sense, the car we know today, a car for everybody.
The industry has been accused, certainly in the 20th century, being caught, you know, flat-footed as societal changes or taste change, as economic pressures shift for what people are willing to pay or able to pay. How do you put this era where, you know, the future is uncertain about when fully autonomous vehicles are coming and you know, how the industry is going to adapt? I mean, we're seeing, for example, a lag in the driving and sales of electric, all electric vehicles. I think, you know, a lot of people thought we'd be further along there. So how is the industry, in your view, poised to adapt to these changes?
I think it's a very good question. I think we should separate the domestic industry, you know, sort of the big three out of Detroit, and the global industry. If you look towards China, China's the number one market now. I believe it's about 30 million cars a year are sold there. Here it's about 17 million. So the Chinese auto companies are coming very fast. And they're coming to the United States, by the way, in a way that the Japanese didn't. In other words, they're not coming with small, cheap cars. They're coming with luxury automobiles. The other thing that's going on is it's become very difficult to make money selling sort of your bog standard sedan. In fact, most dealerships lose money on those things. Detroit makes its money selling pickup trucks, and the biggest sellers in the country are the 1, 2, and 3 are the Ford, the GM, and the Chrysler pickup trucks. So in a lot of ways, our domestic industry is shrinking to the point where Ford, for example, is a truck company. That's all they really want to sell, and they make very good money doing it. Whether those companies are poised to make the transition, I'm not an analyst of that. I can't say, but I will say that for all the excitement about kind of Silicon Valley startups, these companies in Detroit have so much capital and make so much cash that they can easily come in and just buy one. It's sort of small change for them. So how that plays out in terms of the industry, I honestly can't say. But then lastly, the need to keep up with the transition to electric and the transition to autonomy is very expensive, and these companies are investing heavily in it.
We're talking with car critic, historian, and author Dan Gilbert. Dan Albert, his new book, Are We There Yet? The American Automobile, Past, Present, and Driverless. If you want to talk about the industry's evolution and how it's attempting to invest in the newest technologies, which will be dominant in the future, we're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. And like so many of us, I'm trying to square this industry that has consumers favoring larger vehicles, SUVs, pickup trucks, like you describe, and a future which is seen as inevitable as all electric vehicles, which almost out of necessity are going to have to be smaller, and autonomous vehicles, which aren't necessarily going to match up in usage with utility-oriented vehicles. So how do you square that, you know, how people are voting with their dollars with what the future is supposedly going to be?
Yeah, I, again, very, very interesting questions. I think what we're seeing so far is, and as you say, the market, the public has not really gravitated toward these electric vehicles. California in the United States, half of all electric vehicles are sold in California. And certainly people are motivated either because they happen to love the particular model or because they get incentives from the government. But it's not clear that on a comparable basis, these cars are, first of all, they're not profitable for companies to make. And secondly, they sell at a premium over comparable vehicles. I think the other thing worth noting is, you know, you think of Tesla. Okay, so here's a cutting edge electric car company. What they really have been selling is, you know, 0 to 60 acceleration of 4 seconds and a very large car with very good range and, you know, autopilot and things that really are in a lot of ways good old fashioned car things. Right. So those, there's no sense in which that changes things enormously. In other words, changing from gasoline to electric changes things enormously.
We'll continue our conversation with Dan Albert, author of Are We There Yet? The American Automobile Past, Present, and Driverless. Also take your calls at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Back in 1 minute. Good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Fresh Air with Terry Gross comes right up, but right now we're talking with a car critic and historian, Dan Albert, author of Are We There Yet? The American Automobile, Past, Present, and Driverless. Greg in Beverly Hills, you're on Air Talk.
Hey there. I have a question. I'm looking at the possibility of buying a hydrogen car. It's a Hyundai, actually. But the infrastructure is so limited, basically to Los Angeles and San Francisco, And I'm kind of wondering if that, as they say, is going to be really built out, or is that going to fizzle out and everything's going to be pretty much more electric?
Dan?
I think, well, two things to point out. One is those hydrogen cars are, in fact, electric. You're putting hydrogen into a fuel cell, and that's going to power an electric motor. As far as where California is going to be in terms of the hydrogen car, it, you know, it's one of these Betamax type questions. You can't predict too far, but they're certainly not putting the energy into that, and no pun intended, as they are into battery electrics. The one place you will find hydrogen cars, I think, in the nearer future is in Japan.
All right, Greg, thanks very much. And why is it that Japan has been moving forward on hydrogen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are a lot of people skeptical of the idea of a battery electric car. Hydrogen allows you to refuel as quickly as you can refuel a gasoline car, and that remains one of the big problems with a battery electric car. So even if you have range, it takes you quite a while to refuel. And then I think the other is, you know, companies make bets on different technologies, and I think Toyota and Honda have gone down this road, Toyota particularly. You know, they sort of have faith in that technology, the fuel cell technology, and they hope it'll move forward.
I want to talk about car culture. You write a lot about this, and we touched on it briefly. The, you know, the wealthy person's fun, you know, toy racing and, you know, driving a car for pleasure. Then it becomes more integrated in a part of middle class Americans' lives as it's mass produced. And we give rise to a car enthusiast culture, which is not just a niche, but is pretty widespread, at least in this country. And people become knowledgeable about cars. They work on their own cars. It's a rite of passage for a young person to get his or her driver's license. And, you know, cars become an extension of identity. That's changing very dramatically, where young people today don't necessarily rush to get their driver's license. They're not necessarily seeing cars as more than just a utility. And do you think that that's an inevitable progression, that American car culture is going to go away?
Well, at one level, I certainly hope not, because I like to work on my own cars, and I think there are a lot of people who will continue to enjoy really the fun of driving and not just in the kind of, you know, sports car, race car sense, but actually enjoy their own vehicle as, you know, their own. People still name their cars. People still look at them as a refuge. And I think the other thing, and I talk about this in the book, this idea of what I call incognito car guys. And obviously the term is gendered when we say guys, and the automobile is very much gendered as male. But I found, just in talking to people, that there are plenty of, you know, middle-aged women, octogenarian men who still love their cars and have no interest in giving up driving in order to, you know, sit in the back seat and be chauffeured around. But I do think, and we've already seen this, you know, the kind of the newest car I work on is a 2007. I have a 2000 I work on. Beyond that, it just gets kind of, you know, you pull out one black box and you put it in the
body. I was going to say, it's not the same experience,
right?
Clearly. We're talking with Dan Albert, who's a car historian and critic, author of Are We There Yet? The American Automobile Past, Present, and Driverless. To what do you attribute this shift among younger Americans to where the feeling about cars is different? Do you think it's what you're just mentioning, that as they've become essentially computers on wheels and it's harder for people to work on them, that that's distanced people from their cars?
I certainly think so. And I think, too, the level of quality, you know, you don't worry. You can get a car and not worry about it. It's not as intensive an experience as it used to be. Even things like, you know, the rise of of the car wash industry. You know, just take it in for a car, the Sunday wash, those kind of ablutions that you did with your car. People don't have that same intimacy. I will say, and I found this with my own daughter, you know, she turned 16 and she was sort of like, you know, maybe I'll drive, maybe I'll get the license. And eventually she learned to drive, and boy, does she love it. And I don't mean the sense of freedom. We all talk about that. And, you know, it's very important. You turn 16, you got your own set of wheels. But she actually, and we have an old minivan, she's perfectly happy driving that. She'll put on her music. We'll say, where were you? What have you been doing? Oh, I was driving. I was out driving, you know. And so even as that kind of intimacy with the vehicle and the machine itself fades away, I do think that as people get involved with it and actually drive, you know, as teenagers do get their licenses, they fall in love with the act of driving the same way Americans have for generations.
Well, is that true with my son? He's 18, just turned 18, got his license first day he could after his 16th birthday, and he goes for pleasure drives. He'll come home and say, yeah, I was driving up Angeles Crest Highway, or, you know, just because for him, it's time for him to be alone and to think and to see different stuff. And I have to say, that's very much my experience of driving, starting when I was a teenager. For me, it's real psychological benefits. And I still love to drive, just back from a European trip where I drove nearly 2,000 miles in a week and a half. So, you know,
wow.
I love to drive.
Absolutely.
Through the Spanish countryside. Dan Albert, thanks so much. Appreciate your being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Always a good day when I get to talk cars.
Yeah, can't beat it. The American Automobile, Past, Present, and Driverless, the subtitle of Are We There Yet? From Dan Albert. Stay tuned. Fresh Air with Terry Gross is next. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 10 for our next Air Talk. A. Martinez joining me earlier today as we had a chance to talk about NBA free agency. And, of course, A's going to be with you with Take 2 coming up this afternoon at 2. Right here on 89.3. Have yourself a great afternoon.